Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 12th of August. I don't know if this article caught your attention. I'm sure it did many of you. It was in the New York Times on Sunday on the front page. Students can't get a D here no matter how little they try. The school district is Mount Olive, New Jersey, and the way that the Mount Olive School District sees it, students should not be getting by with D's on their report cards. This fall, there will be no more D's, only A, B, C, and F. Dr. Lori Reynolds, the Mount Olive superintendent who led the campaign against D's as a way to raise the bar and motivate students to work harder, said, "It's a throwaway grade. No one wants to hire a D anything. So why should we have D students and give them credit for it?" It got us thinking about grading policies and why we have the policy we do. Mount Olive, in case you do fail, has a way for you to rectify that grade. I don't know about you, but I only got one D. I was a goody two-shoes in school. And what was it in? And if we remember this forever, sixth grade art. And as a variation on the Harry Chapin song goes, "And she never drew again," which is true. How can you give somebody a D in art? But they've done this for a different reason. So we're going to be talking about grading this hour of the program. We'll have two guests with us. Larry Reynolds will be joining us from the Mount Olive School District. Larry is the superintendent. And later we'll speak with an associate professor of education at St. Norbert College about the whole grading system. Here's our phone number for you to join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Larry Reynolds, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So is this a radical thing you've done? People said, how can you change the grading system?
I guess for some people it might be. But in terms of real society, we really don't have this level of three or four levels of good. Generally speaking, when your boss gives you a job, you don't say, okay, now what do I have to do in order to get an A? They generally tell you, no, here's the job, and I want it done right. And by the way, it's at any segment or any strata, from be it airline pilot, and I guess an A airline pilot lands a plane all the time. Anything less than that lands it every now and then. And the same thing with a doctor or a lawyer, but even a plumber or a refrigerator repairman. Let's suppose, for instance, the old refrigerator breaks down, and they call you on the phone, and you call them on the phone and say, I need somebody to come out. And they say, well, do you want the A, B, C, or D repairman? And you'd say, what's the difference? Well, the A repairman will fix it, and it will never be, you will know for the next 3 years it won't be broken again. The D repairman will fix it, and it might break down again 2 or 3 months from now. So who wouldn't say, well, give me the A?
Right. Of course.
We just don't have that. In schools, however, I guess since the time immemorial, we've had this sort of idea that there's some level of not good enough, but it's not excellent, but we'll give you credit for it anyway. And I'm not so sure that we don't need several levels of that, perhaps an A and a B. And I'm arguing, at least for the time being, that C is probably there as well. But D is definitely, the time has come and gone when D work could be accepted, considering the competitors that we have in the world.
How do you think we look at D work right now? Is it you could get a C if you worked a little harder, you're a little less than average? What's its meaning right now?
D is a way of failing with credit. You really don't know the material. And it's a joke that everybody understands, but you've done something nice for the teacher, and you've tried perhaps in the last week, and maybe you turned in one quarter of the work.
Right.
The difference between D students and F students is that you at least did some of the work and had a good attitude. The F student didn't do any of the work and had a bad attitude. But the reality is this, that schools are really not or shouldn't be about grades or scores or getting through or diploma. They should really be about the learning that is necessary in order to be successful in life.
Mm-hmm.
And to the extent that they're not, there's a disconnect between kids going to school and getting a diploma and then being able to do anything with it. And unfortunately, that's the reason why a lot of people, for instance, when in your lead-in, you mentioned that you yourself had a D. Imagine that D was not an option. In other words, suppose that someone set up schools that there was no D, there was only this standard. You either fix this, you either meet the standard or you don't. And if you meet the standard, then you go on and get a credit. And if you don't meet the standard, well, sorry. I agree with you, by the way. I don't think you can grade in art or music or PE. Because if you did, the fastest kid would get an A,
sure.
And the best singer would get an A. I mean, you can't really do it that way. But with respect to things that students really need to know in terms of the academic world, which is English and math and social studies and science and foreign language and all the rest of it, there should be a standard of quality, just like the Department of Motor Vehicles has for its driver's license. You know, that we don't want kids, we don't want D drivers on the road. And so they set a standard. I don't know what it is in Wisconsin, but here in New Jersey, it's 80%. And guess what? They have no excuses. It doesn't matter if you're special ed or ESL or anything. You go down there, and if you want a driver's license, it's 80% on the test, and then you have to pass the driver's test with a state trooper in the car. And if you say, well, my mom says I don't have to do it, or I didn't do my – you know, they don't care.
Sure.
And then, by the way, if you fail the test, there's no refund. You just do it over again. And I think that standard of quality for driver's exams has got to be, at minimum, the standard of quality we have for something important like biology.
The article in the Times, Larry, said that 389 of 1,500 students at Mount Olive High School had a D on their final report cards this past June. Does that strike you as a very high number?
It does. Yes, and I think that the in talking to the teachers and many of the parents, it basically is the same thing that I find in my own house, that the kids are masters, absolute masters of feigning ignorance. My children, for instance, do not know how to operate a washing machine. They don't know how to properly clean their room, even though I know they do. But, you know, if you go and say, well, clean up your room, and then they say, well, it is cleaned up. You go, this is not cleaned up. I mean, let me show you. And then you do it for them. They stand back watching, kind of snickering.
Yeah, right.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
This is how you mow the lawn. This is how you put gas in the car. This is how you clean the car up. They know how to do this stuff. The fact is we have been, as a society, allowing our kids to do much less than what was necessary in order to be considered an excellent job. And at the same time, the rest of the world has caught up. You know, in India and Pakistan and Japan and Germany, these other kids who are coming to our schools, they are just outperforming and blowing our kids away. And every single year, our valedictorians, more and more, are beginning with foreign-born names.
Yes.
The reason for that is because there is a work culture and a standard for excellence in these cultures that we used to have but no longer do.
What happened to it?
I suspect it, you know, because we want everybody to feel good and we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or whatever, we decided that it's better just to let students get by because we care about them. And we do love our kids, but we care about them enough just to, all right, just give them a credit, give them a diploma, it's okay, they'll go on, and they'll find something in life. But the reality is, with the Internet and all the rest of the global economy, they're being challenged by kids from China. In fact, there are more honors kids in China than there are kids in America. So the day has come when we begin to take a look ourselves in the mirror as educators and say, do we really want to educate kids? Do we really care about doing that? And if so, do we love them through it enough to see and to insist upon a minimum standard? And at least in our case, we're saying C,
mm-hmm.
or 70%. That is it. If you don't have 70%, either remediate that program throughout the year or do it over.
Now, you do have, tell me if this is right, 3 days to repeat the work for a C if you fail a test or you haven't done your paper or your homework assignment?
Yes, for any graded exam, because along with high expectations, you must also provide high standards or high standards of support. To support the effort, for any graded exam, project, quiz, anything that receives a grade, the teachers, when they post that grade and we have online grading, when they post that grade of F, an automatic email is generated and sent to whoever it is that email is connected to. So mom and dad, every time your child is going to get an F, starting this fall, you're going to get an email saying your child just received an F. And by the way, we think that's going to dramatically reduce the number of Fs because this is the story. You come home from work and you say, hi, son, hi, daughter, any homework tonight? No. Do you have any tests today? No. Have any tests tomorrow? No.
Right.
How about any tests in the future?
No.
Not that I know of. And you say, well, how it comes there's never any tests down in that school? Oh, they have substitute teachers all the time. I mean, they give you these stories.
I know.
And it's fascinating how clever they are in determining. And by the way, I did the same thing when I was in high school, so I don't begrudge them the point. But the idea here is, though, to if we were to alert parents, letting them know that your child, son or daughter, has just failed an exam, and moreover, that you have 3 days, 3 school days to fix it. After 3 school days, it's over. And by the way, the best you can get is a 70%. So if you do 87% on the fix, it's adjusted to a 70. If you do 62% on a fix, it's a 62. So in other words, there's a ding for not turning it in or not doing it right the first time. But nonetheless, to give parents a warning notice. Your child's just failed something, and they have 3 days to fix it. I believe that most parents will want to see it fixed, and more kids will have their car keys taken away. More kids will have, you know, put down the video game and get the study done. There'll be more access to our National Honor Society student tutors and so forth and so on. And I believe that will dramatically lower our opportunity for kids making the D.
And then you've even instituted a program where you can go to evening school, charging $150 per class.
Yes, in the event that we have some holdouts, that kids have just decided, I'm not going to take the second chance opportunity, at the end of the quarter in which a student were to have a failing grade on any core, by the way, English, Math, Social Studies, and Science, we're providing a night school. It's 3 nights a week, 5 weeks, or 30 hours per class, and a student can sign up for those classes, and they can receive credit for the quarter that they've just failed. Now, the credit, actually, instead of being a 70, we give them, if they'll come to the program and pay us $150, basically, to pay the teacher's salary. But if they come to the program, we incent them not only by giving them credit, not only by helping them in the class they're in presently, but also changing their failing grade in that quarter to an 80, that is, to equivalent of a B, pretty much guaranteeing that they're going to be able to go through the rest of the year. So that's our, quote, introductory offer, unquote, to try to get kids more interested and more involved and more excited about passing the classes that they're in.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We are going to have many of them, I'm sure. Our guest the first half hour is Larry Reynolds, who he is superintendent of the Mount Olive School District. And he says D's are not useful in our society. It's a throwaway grade. Nobody wants to hire a D anything, so why would we have D students and give them credit for it? So there are no more D's. I'm sure that many of you are from districts where there's a different grading system. I think the ABCDF is still quite prevalent in this country. But what do you think of this idea? What is a D? Should we do away with it? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls. And we start with David from Adams Friendship. Hi, David.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
I agree with virtually everything your guest is saying about sort of the general attitude of kids and what's expected of them. Here in Adams Friendship, we have a different grading system. As you mentioned, there's a few different things out there. We have a 1-2-3-4 grading system. It's not the same as the college 1-2-3-4 system where you can equate them to grades. It is actually more similar to how we look at kids on the state testing system with a minimal, basic, proficient, and advanced system. So that's what the 1-2-3-4 corresponds to. And there's 2 grades really given for each class. One is for their academic performance, and one is for their work habits. And as a parent, I'm blessed with kids where the academics come fairly easily, but yet even though they're getting 3s and 4s or proficient and advanced in their grades, the work habits, if I see that there's a 2 given, I know that they're not trying their hardest, and I can still talk to my children about you need to put more effort, even if they're getting the grades. On the other hand, I am an employee of the school district, and I also know kids that work very, very hard, and may only get twos and threes, and that's their best, and that work habits grade can also reflect that by giving a three and a four on that side of the grade. And I was just wondering what your guest, Mr. Reynolds, knew about that grading system and what he thinks about it.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Yeah, I think that there's some good things there. We certainly need to have grades that are linked to some sort of objective standard beside the teacher's grade card, because we constantly are asking ourselves in Mount Olive, New Jersey, it's a suburb of New York City, but how do we know that our A is the same A, let's say, they would have in Boston, Massachusetts? Is our A the same? And objective measures such as, you know, state exams or some sort of translating program which says that R1 is equivalent to an advanced proficient on the New Jersey AS, which is our state exam, that does hold some promise as well.
And thank you, David, for your call. We go to Bob from Milwaukee. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Great program. I'm a parent of a college-age student, and he is extremely bright. His first semester at high school in Verona, he got straight A's easily. But then all of his friends started kidding him and calling him a nerd. And apparently it's not cool to be smart, so he just fell back in with the rest of his group and just barely got by high school. He's in college now and has made the dean's list for the last 2 years. But in his first semester, he thought he could just get by doing what he did in high school. And I recall one day he called me and he was excited. He said he got a B- on an exam. And I know his potential is much greater than that. And I said, well, are you happy with that grade? And he said, well, yeah. I mean, I got a B-, Dad. And I said, well, how am I supposed to motivate you to do your best if you're happy with a B-? And he was very upset with me. But he realized that to get ahead in life and to be successful, it's really important to do your best, and he's doing very well now. He has a 3.75 grade point. But I think part of our problem as a society is that we coddle our kids too much, and learning should be hard. They should be challenged. They should be asked to do more if they're capable of it, and I just don't see that in our current system. It might be a great idea to go to a pass-fail rather than the current grade system that we have, and raise the standards, because as your guest has pointed out, we're lagging behind in education and on almost every measure, and our society is in great jeopardy right now, not only with our economy, but with our future. Our future is in education and with our children, and we really need to push them to do their best.
Larry.
Yeah, I completely agree. If we really believe in education, especially public education, if we think that the education of our kids is really important enough, for instance, to maintain our status as a world leader, as a country, then obviously we need to begin putting our money where our mouth is. And by the way, it's not necessarily putting more money in it. It's actually making our schools real learning institutions as opposed to just simply being something you go through, a phase of life. Here's a classic example, and I'd ask all of the people who are listening to think of this. The most fundamental idea in the field of biology is something called DNA. It's the number one most important thing. Most people listening today don't even know what DNA stands for, even though they had it in high school, and even though they probably got an A in it or a B. And it just goes to show that the latter has been leaned against the wrong wall. Now, at some point, we knew that DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid, but at some other point, we decided it wasn't important enough to remember. And perhaps it wasn't important enough to remember because it wasn't taught properly or for whatever reason. But the reality is this, that we have to get our schools to a situation or to a place where learning is important and connected to real-world things that we really need to be able to do, to accomplish as a nation.
What do you think of pass-fail?
Well, in certain classes, I think it's a really good idea, and this is what I would do for something, for instance, in PE. How do you give a grade in PE or in art? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you put a grade on the Mona Lisa? Does it get, you know, a D or a B? Now, some people would say it's an A. I don't actually like it. I've actually seen it. I think
you don't like it.
I think it as a piece of art. I wouldn't have it in my house unless it was the original. I don't have a copy of it. I like a certain other kind of art. In other words, arts are somewhat subjective, and so therefore maybe there's some sort of standard that they could be a pass-fail on, and then the standard would be, you know, did you do the sculpture? Did you do the artwork? That could be a pass. But grading an art is always a little difficult. I know Simon, for instance, American Idol, he could grade people in singing, but I think you can either sing or you can't, and maybe that's a pass-fail opportunity as well. The point is, I think that whenever there is some sort of science to this to the course, and even in music, by the way, there's a science. In music theory, for instance, and being able to analyze various pieces of art or being able to understand the rules of a game and PE, the science part of it, I think, can be graded on a subjective scale. But I think the things that are more artistic and talent-oriented probably are best in the way of pass and fail.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bob, for your call. Peter is next in Kingston. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that you're blaming the student for the teacher's inability to adequately communicate the subject matter. And I strove for D's in high school, and I made it to college. Thank you.
Well, certainly teachers have a role to play, every district is different. What we're doing here in this district is based on who our teachers are, and actually I think they're quite good. I wouldn't give them an A. I would say they're a solid B group of teachers in our secondary schools, but they're improving. I think a year ago they were probably not as good, but I think they're improving. The reality, however, is that learning, it cannot be forced. It is something that is internal. And by the way, if it is forced, it will be forgotten. In order to learn anything, you have to be interested and engaged. And if you're not interested and engaged, certainly the teacher can have a part in that. But you have to take your part as well. And up until now, students have pretty much been left out of the equation in terms of, you know, they're challenged and they work after school and they have this to do and that to do. The reality is this is the most precious thing that anybody could ever do for themselves. And that is to educate themselves. And to do anything less than their best is really a travesty.
Mm-hmm. It's their job. That's the job when you're a student, is to learn. What kind of response are you getting from parents, from teachers, from students?
Well, most of the response has been positive. We have some people who think, especially people who perhaps they themselves have made a D in the past. And by the way, I have made a D in my career, educational career. My daughter just recently made a D. Actually, three different quarters, she made a D in geometry, and then somehow at the end of the year, she made a C. I happen to think that, and by the way, she's in a different school district, but I actually think that that is what's wrong with schools, that there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that she knows absolutely nothing about geometry, and she has a C in the class. I think I would rather have, even though this sounds hard, I would rather have her really know the geometry, and perhaps she's in the wrong class to begin with because she doesn't know enough math, because earlier in her career somebody just continued her on with some sort of grade in math and she really didn't understand it. This is what I'm talking about. The public schools have become this game where kids go through and they just pick up points, like some Nintendo game, and at the end they get the crown, and the crown is a diploma. It's not a game. It's really important stuff. And so I think most people get that at the fundamental level. I think, on the other hand, nobody wants to have a grueling, tough-minded, difficult, hard, education. Nobody wants that. They like it once it's over, because then they feel rewarded that they did it. And I'm not suggesting that education, all of it, has to be that way. But in our core classes in our schools, this is not MIT or Harvard. This is basic fundamental algebra and geometry and biology and seventh grade math and eighth grade science. Everybody has to do it. Everybody has to. These are fundamental ideas that everybody really has to know about. And until they do, we've got to do our job to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to make them successful.
So tell me about your D, Larry.
I had a D actually in PE.
No, PE?
Yeah, I think my gym socks were running around the locker somewhere. I don't think I ever took them home. But yeah, I got a D for not having the clean clothes, I guess it was.
Oh my gosh.
And it was totally my fault. Totally my fault.
Nonetheless.
But even though I'd had A's, B's, and I made C's as well, I can tell you that I never really tried hard until I got into classes that I thought the rumor was, oh, you don't want to go to that class. I remember this one class. I went to school at Oklahoma State. And I remember this one class there that the professor taught, and everybody said, oh, you don't want to be in that class because it's the weeder class. Well, you get in there and you never get out. And I tried everything to avoid it, and it was the only class I had to take. And I headed off to the last class before my doctorate was conferred. So I actually got in that class, and it was hard. But I found that I could do it. I was warned that it was hard. I geared up for it. I was ready for it, and I did it. And it took more time than the other courses, and it took me. It was really unusual in that I thought in that class. Someone's asked me to actually do thinking in that class, and because most classes don't really inspire thinking, they're just more about doing and reading and responding.
Right. And you did it. You went through the class, and you did it. I love the way you said that. That makes you feel really good when you can do it.
Mm-hmm. It does. And we're not saying that you have to make it 100%. We're saying that everybody can make at least 70%. Somebody drew the standard at 60. Why, I don't know. But we're redrawing the standard at 70. And we believe that our kids can do 70%.
Thank you so much for being with us. It was a great half hour with you. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Larry Reynolds, superintendent of the Mount Olive School District. And the article we're referencing is on the front page of the New York Times for this past Sunday, Mount Olive in New Jersey, very close to New York. We're going to continue our conversation. And the reason we're talking about the article is that the school district has done away with D's. You have to have a 70 or better to pass a class. Who wants a D anything, he says, so let's just get rid of it. How do we happen to have the system that we have? Is there a better grading system? Do we need grading systems? We're continuing our conversation. We're just changing guests. And so all of your calls, if you're on hold, stay where you are. We'll be with you momentarily. Professor Steve Correa is joining us now, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. And our email address, because our phones have been busy, you can always get through on email, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Professor Correa, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, very happy to be here.
How did this system, ABCDF, become pretty much the standard? Do you know the history of this?
Just a little bit. I think sometimes, though, if anybody has seen the movie Fiddler on the Roof,
sure.
If you remember Tevye's response to his daughter's constant requests, the rationale for not doing something was always tradition. And certainly the tradition hangs on with this. As best as I've been able to discern, it seems to come from the an English system. And, of course, Card dealt with heavy stock thick paper that came back and forth. I have to say, with my own kids, I haven't seen a report card in ages. I get an electronic readout on a computer screen. But nonetheless, it dates back to probably the 1870s something like that. So the English system has always been a little bit different, but nonetheless, it very much dealt with ranking and the ability to be able to separate performance from certain classes of people. And, of course, now we jump across the English Channel and we go to Binet, we look at IQ testing. And, of course, the idea there was to be able to have a more dispassionate measure of potential. And so it wasn't just the child's origins, it was the child's potential for learning. And so they were trying to eliminate the class issues with that.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly with your previous guest, I mean, Mount Olive is a very, maybe affluence a little bit strong, but certainly a secure school district. And so they want very strong things for their students. And so they've decided to be able to have to eliminate this measure. And the idea then is, they hope to be able to improve performance by eliminating the possibility of a designation for a subpar academic performance.
If one of your children brought a D home on a report card, what would your response be?
Well, I think probably, although listen to the complete response, I'd first be mad at myself because I was surprised. And that would mean that the communication back and forth with the school had not taken place.
Oh.
And as an education professor, I understand both sides of the desk. And teachers are very busy people. They have a million and one things coming at them. And so sometimes parents have to be politely aggressive at maintaining communication with schools and with teachers. And that does not mean being a helicopter parent, but what that means is knowing and having an awareness of your child's performance. And so if you're surprised, you probably should look in the mirror first. The previous guest was talking about children's ability to communicate their school performance,
right,
and what happened during the day.
Yes.
Now, almost every parent will talk about the challenges of finding out what happened at school that day. You know, it makes interviewing an Al-Qaeda suspect look easy. but the idea is that you have to find that out, and so you're looking for multiple avenues to be able to find out about
yes.
things. So, you know, so that's what you've got to do. And then you need to be able to find out what's going on, and you need to be able to talk. So to look at a report card as the only measure, wow, that's a red flag that should be going up dramatically, because those days passed a long time ago. You have to be, you know, you have to know what's going on. So, you know, teachers and parents need to be able to have a perhaps a parent portal, someplace to look at grades, someplace to look at progress, something that goes on parent conferences on occasion. But a report card as the measure, ooh, that's a recipe for trouble.
Yeah. Let's hop back to some phone calls. We have a lot of people who have been on hold for a while. Teresa from Viroqua. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel strongly that we kind of have a challenging philosophical approach to education in this country. In other countries, education is a privilege, not a right. And I have seven kids, and I really have hammered that into their heads since they were young. I don't care if they come home with F's. I mean, I care. But I'm not a helicopter hovering kind of parent. It's like, you know what? You get an F, that's your responsibility. That's not my problem. You don't learn the stuff, that's your responsibility. And my kids are so competitive. I think that the older kids, as they went on to college, the younger kids were really kind of instilled with this competitive thing with their siblings, to the extent that they really have taken charge of their education and making sure that they learn. And a good example is my son, one of my sons, Tom, who was in high school. He was at a charter high school, but they had options to take classes at the public high school, the regular classes. So he was taking Western Civ so he could get that credit out of the way. But he was, after 2 weeks in that class, he came home, he said, Mom, if I have to, I am so bored, I don't think I can do it. I just don't think I can do it. I go, well, what are your options? He said, well, I could drop out, but they're going to give me an F, and then I could arrange a class at the charter school, which is the way they work there. They're very independent, and they have responsibility for their classes. He says, I could bring in a teacher. I've got other kids who want to take the class. We want to do an AP level. We want to do two semesters instead of one. But if I'm going to do that, then I'm going to end up with an F on my transcript. And so we sat down and talked about it, and he opted to take the F in order to learn, to actually learn, and had a wonderful year in Western Civ, taking two semesters just to get that one credit. He did get the credit, even though the F is on his transcript. And it was an issue, but he managed through it all. He just got admitted to the University of Chicago with an F on his transcript because it was actually pretty powerful, the story that he had behind his
F. Oh, quite a powerful story. It sure was.
And, yeah, the knowledge was more important to him than the grade.
Mm-hmm. Larry. I mean, Larry.
Oh,
Steve,
hi.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I'll respond to anything. no, and that's interesting because, you know, a lot of the times what we really want students to do is, most parents or most schools are looking at a performance grade as opposed to a learning grade.
Right.
And this is a wonderful example of a student chose learning over performance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the words that, and I'm sure that the previous guest is just a wonderful gentleman and many positive things, but he did say a few things that I found very troubling. One that, I took offense at was he talked about foreign-born names coming up to the top of the list. my name is foreign born. Korea is the Smith and Jones of Portugal. My father was born there. You know, this is not an us versus them. This is about kids. This is about learning. This is about having students reach their potential. It's not about they've got a game, I've got a game, ha, we're going to change the rules and now you have to do more. It should be a partnership. It should be encouraging. It should be people working together. It should be joint ownership. Now, that's a little bit pie in the sky, but let me tell you, that's the way the workplace works. Teams are in place. People understanding goals, consensus building. It is not, you know, the days of the Larry Tate, the boss, and demanding, you know, performance. Those days aren't exactly here anymore. So I think the goal is laudable, but certainly the caller describing her son, wow, you know, no wonder they got into the University of Chicago.
Exactly. He has a great story to tell. But isn't it true, Professor Correa, that a number of the valedictorians are Asian students, that there's a different culture at home, learning is prized more, people encourage each other and work together at the dining room or kitchen table and get things done, that there's more attention paid to school.
And certainly, now some of that is a direct result of cultural, meaning accountability through parents and then family responsibility and then concepts of honor and wanting to have respect for the family. And fantastically, that translates to, you know, extreme expectations for school performance. And that is absolutely true. So what we want to try to do, though, is not identify that as an us versus them, or look, those people are doing these things.
Right.
What can we incubate? What can we take from that
to
be able to help all of us?
Mm-hmm.
And then, boy, now you've got a group working together and you have a culture of performance in school and not a look what they're doing, be like them. You know, that sets up an adversarial relationship.
Yes.
And it's not going to work.
Point well taken. Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi.
Good morning. I when I was young.
Whoops. Hello.
Oops.
Are you there, Sarah? Well, Sarah, you'll have to call us back and tell us about the years after you were young. We go to Michael from Austin. Hi, Michael.
Hi. A question that I'm having or wondering is they're raising the expectations of the children. But what are they doing to raise the expectations of the teachers? Because what I've noticed a lot is there's a lot of teachers that are the teachers, and they're ingrained in. And what are we going to start doing to start raising the bar of teachers and then to expect the children to come up? Because right now I'm seeing that they're expecting the bar of children to come up, but there's no grading system for the teachers. Is there any plan or what would be the plan of bringing that up?
I think that's an interesting point. If I could just take that just slightly to the side, one of the things that districts need to do, and some are doing it, but it's a challenging thing to do, is to have teachers spend time talking with each other and perhaps being guided by people with this type of expertise in metrics and measurement and performance, to be able to talk about what does an A look like in seventh grade geography? What does a C look like? What kind of performance do we look like? What kind of measures do we do? And to get teachers to talk about those things, then over time, I think we have a gradual upgrade of consistency and what is called inter-rater reliability. I think what the caller is talking about is measures of teacher performance regarding teaching. And some districts are looking at that, and boy, that's a whole nother kettle of fish to be able to look at how we measure teacher performance. But I think districts need to be able to develop more consistent measures of A's and B's. Hence, everybody knows, ooh, take her, she's easy, take her, she's hard.
Right.
That hopefully would be at least eliminated or at least narrowed quite a bit.
Well, what kind of system, Professor Correa, do you think we should have? Is there something better?
Well, you know, there's lots of ways to measure students' grades. One thing that struck me when I first heard about the eliminating of the D was the customer satisfaction surveys that some of us get, and sometimes we're given two choices: were we satisfied or highly satisfied? You know, because what's going to happen when you eliminate a D is, of course, the C range is going to get lowered. Now, whether or not that's practically, it is going to get lowered. And then, of course, some of the students are going to end up getting repeated. But, you know, the very strong program at Alverno College, they have narrative assessment. Alverno did away with grades generations ago. But, again, teachers have hundreds of things, if not thousands, coming at them. And so, you know, the grade is a quick and easy way to be able to do that. Anybody listening that's been to New York City lately, they have grades for restaurants outside.
Do they?
Yeah, and, you know, for the cleanliness and those kind of things.
A, B, C, D, F?
Well, I don't know if it goes to F, but, you know, I don't know how popular a C restaurant is unless it's on the subway stop. but, you know, we like that quick and easy. And the problem is, this isn't quick and easy. This is human beings. And human beings are neither quick nor easy. And so, you know, there are narrative report cards. There are opportunities for comments. There's ongoing meetings with parents. There's portfolios. There's all kind of measures. You bring in MAP tests. You bring in standardized tests. You look at students' grading. And so probably assessment should be ongoing and not just simply summative. It should be looked at formative, so you develop these things over time. And then at the end, of course, we all have to be able to do that. But, you know, as way of an analogy, can you imagine if the IRS could give people's tax returns grades? I mean, adults should be able to do these. Of course, we would think that would be quite silly. But in reality, schools are one of the few places where there's just a straight outcome. Boom, here it is. Much more complex than that. So, you know, there's lots of ways to be able to do this, but the pressures of teachers and timelines lead us to back to this, you know, A through F. We've eliminated D's, at least in one area, grade.
Professor Steve Correa is our guest this half hour, Associate Professor of Education at St. Norbert College. In case you're just tuning us in, we're talking about getting rid of D's on report cards. A school district in New Jersey eliminated D's from their grading system, saying that they're just not useful. If you can't get a C or above, you just don't pass. What do you think? We're talking about grading and getting an idea of why we have the system that we have. And welcoming your calls. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And this is the AI Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number two of our program will speak with a co-author of Stuff, Compulsive Hoarding and the Meaning of Things, Dr. Randy Frost, professor of psychology at Smith College and an internationally known expert on obsessive compulsive disorder and compulsive hoarding and on the pathology of perfectionism. We go back to phone calls now for Professor Steve Correa. Our next caller is Jack in Gays Mills. Hi, Jack.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on another aspect of the modern school system that I think feeds into this mediocrity, and that's students can take all the right classes and then either graduate early or in their senior year have to take very few classes. And I find a lot of eight advanced placement kids in these classes, and so they end up with their senior year taking one class each semester and just kind of skating through, and then it's no surprise that they have a hard time in college. So I think that feeds into this discussion as to kids having it too easy.
Steve?
Yeah, that's an interesting, you know, observation. And we've noticed that in college, kids are increasingly coming in with a large number of AP credits. And, you know, sometimes five or six, and frankly, that's not unusual. And that's been encouraged in for lots of levels, policy levels. You know, it's perceived as higher level performance and more demanding and those kind of things. And while those students might have stronger declarative level knowledge, not necessarily has there been time developed for the reasoning, the analytical, and the writing skills that students need to succeed in college. And certainly, anytime you're looking at a senior year that is a accrued senior year, I mean, that's a systemic problem with the system. That's a structural problem. That should never be the case. And again, that's the idea that, you know, you provide these encouraging situations for students to be able to, you know, be challenged more. But, of course, it provides the senior year that sometimes is not terrifically productive. So, you know, we need to be able to have a constant up-ramping with support for students to do academic performance. But I've noticed the outcome of that as a college professor. Now, this doesn't mean that that's a bad thing. It just means that that senior year should be just as academically and intellectually fulfilling.
Right. Thanks, Jack. Rhonda in De Pere. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, good morning. I am a alumni of St. Norbert's, and I've been in Dr. Korea's class.
Oh.
I was calling on the opposite end. I teach kindergarten, and when I do, like, running record assessment on five-year-olds, they're sort of getting that I'm scoring them already at 5 years old, and I have to kind of hold a little piece of paper in front of what I'm marking because it almost distracts them. It's just kind of, here we are, you know, we're already at five. We're sort of ingraining in these little children that you are going to be tested and graded. You know, it's kind of sad to me, but it's reality. So that was my comment.
Thank you, Rhonda. Professor Korea.
Oh, yes, I remember Rhonda in class. She's wonderful. And, of course, you know, you think about a lot of the things we do in the younger grades, and they are much more student-oriented, child-oriented, learning-oriented. What do we need to be able to help this person to do, to be able to, you know, to do better, to concentrate, to focus on this skill, that skill? But, of course, you know, students are not, they aren't raised in a vacuum. They understand about grades, and it's like April 15th. You know, they know about that, and of course, that is a shame. So the focus then becomes on outcome and not the learning that takes place on that process between. So really good kindergarten and first grade teachers, they incubate a love of learning and a love of schooling. And there's no reason that shouldn't continue all the way through. Those are good things. Now, of course, there's increased accountability, and the locus of control goes from the teacher to the learner through life. But these are, you know, these are good things, and that's why we communicate with parents. And so we try to stay away from that simple measure at the end of the semester. But good observation. She
yes,
probably
had
very good professors.
No doubt about that. Vince is next in Watertown. Hi, Vince.
Yes, good morning. I'm a retired teacher. I taught for 36 years, 2 years at Menominee Falls and 36 at Watertown. And my philosophy in my teaching career was I'm going to teach the students how to read, how to think, how to write, and how to discuss, and to have the argument about learning, that without an argument, you really can't learn. And we always talk about education. I listen to your programs, and we talk about it, especially during election time, but then we really don't do anything about it. Now, here are a couple of points that I thought about while I was listening to your programs. First of all, I think that most Americans don't really value education, and they're not willing to put their effort into making sure that we have a good educational system. Number two, I think that parents are lacking the training and responsibility and genuine real concern to make certain that the child is learning, and they're more concerned with the grade than anything else. Number three, I feel that administrators are failing to do their jobs. They're not prepared. Most of them have limited time in the classroom, probably 2 years, and then they get their degree and they come in. And they think that the experts in teaching, and when they're involved in the hiring of teachers, they look at the resume and they never look as to whether that person has the ability to teach. So I think that there should be a, before they hire anybody, they should look at that teacher actually teaching. I also think that administrators should teach at least 2 classes a day so that they don't lose touch with the reality of the classroom.
All right, let's go with that because you got a lot there. Professor Korea.
Well, I think you have found a future guest. He's very well spoken and obviously has you know, experienced in the classroom. One of the points that the caller makes, you know, he's absolutely correct. You know, we need to look at what does the district mean by learning? And anybody listening to this, not all districts understand learning in the same way. Hence, back to our first caller, charter schools operate very differently. They all don't operate the same way. They don't look at learning the same way. And so this idea to be able to build consistency is very important. So what does it mean? How do we measure it? How do we chart it? How do we encourage it? How do we incubate it? Those are all very good things. The other issues that the caller's talking about are really much more structural, meaning how do we build integrity into the system? How do we build experienced leaders that are understanding of the full spectrum of the range of expectations and activities within a school district? And certainly the idea of legitimacy is very important among all professionals. And that's really what I think he's talking about with people having a good handle on what goes on in the classroom.
Yeah,
and certainly he's right. It gets a lot more attention with the education president because everybody wants to be that, and less, let's say, about February 1st.
Thanks, Vince, very much for your call. Well, Steve, I just want you to know that we're not just satisfied. We are highly satisfied with your performance this half hour.
Well, WPR has been such, you know, you all are very strong and consistent voices for debating educational issues.
So. Thank you. Thanks so much for being with us. Our guest is from St. Norbert, Steve Correa. Thanks, Christy and Rhonda.